I had the sunim badin. Oh, now you cut. You know, I was delaying things till you would get here. What?
I had to deal with road rage.
Oh, really?
Crazy rabbits that crashed into me.
In the lot?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Did crash or almost crash?
What?
Did crash or almost?
Tried to.
Okay, well, I have an alibi, so it wasn't me. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, you know, continuing along with, you know, the beginning of Avos, so I want to spend a couple more minutes on what we were talking about last time, was having Mesunim Badin. Last time we discussed the dialectic of Rabim Chalol Mipila Batsumim Kol Harugeha, of being, on the one hand, you know, cognizant of the weighty responsibility of Psak, and therefore, you know, ceding authority to the people who, you know, who are really qualified, or at least making sure that you're qualified. And, you know, the harsh words of Chazal, including in the Mishnah and Avos, and that the Rambam also quotes in the context of Hevim Mesunim Badin. In other words, Hevim Mesunim here in this context means Hevim Mesunim, you know, think very deliberately before you decide to get involved in Din, before you decide to be a posek, and also see who, you know, the other authorities are. And we tried to develop, there's much more to say, obviously, but, you know, the model of the whole discussion of Yisro and really Moshe Rabbeinu, which reflect both on a pragmatic level and also on an idealistic level, the you know, some of these issues. On the one hand, the idea that, you know, the Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, should be the one to, you know, even the Devarim HaKetanim, even, you know, the connection to any and every issue and person should get the attention of the Moshe Rabbeinu. But as I was saying last time, in addition to Navol Tivol, you know, burnout and the pragmatic things that come from that, it's also, you know, again, the Sfarno's interpretation, I think, of Navol Tivol, is also things will get mibulbal. You know, it's also, it's not just the burnout, it's also intellectually, you know, you can see too many cases. For a posek, having experience is incredibly important to develop a chush and also just a, you know, a case of, you know, base for psak, that's usually only very good. But if you see too much too soon, you know, and you don't have the ability to give each case, you know, its due, and we'll talk about that in a second, so then, you know, it can also have the opposite effect. It can get, you know, everything can get mixed up and diluted, you know, as well. But in addition to that, what I was trying to explain last time is that there's a benefit, you know, in addition, side by side with the ideal of Moshe Rabbeinu being involved in every single case, both to protect the integrity of the particular psak and of psak generally, and to give, you know, individual cases and people that exposure, in addition to the pragmatic problem with that, it's also not substantively idealistic, because you do want other people, you know, to be involved, to be competent. That's important for the dor. It's also important that that there be other voices in psak, you know, even if there's a hierarchy, you know, and even if there's a, you know, somebody's on the higher level of the hierarchy, the idea of having you know, a whole system is something which is, you know, contributes to libun hadin, and it's like checks and balances, you know, in a very important way. You have that in Sanhedrin, and next year we'll speak about Sanhedrin a lot. Some of the issues we're talking about now are very much Sanhedrin issues. But the idea of, you know, there's the Sanhedrin and there's a hierarchy there, you know, reflected by the way people sit. Again, we'll talk a lot more about it next year. There's also Talmidim, who are not going to be involved in the actual Harah, but are involved in the process of the Shakla Vitaria, you know, the Maso Matan. And that's a very crucial, you know, idea that, you know, everything gets discussed more. Again, that's the also part of the Sfarno's take of the one of the things that Yisro says to Moshe Rabbeinu is, you have Sari Alofim and Sari Meos and whatever, it also contributes not only you know, to avoid burnout and so on, but it really actually is you know, contributes to enhancing or enriching the discussion. We'll get back to that also. So for many reasons, it's good to have both, but you need to have a certain minimum competence. And you need to also know, you know, what areas you're competent in and what areas you're not, or if there's greater competence than you. And again, the Rambam, you know, Sanhedrin that we read last time, who basically has, right after Hevim Mesunim Badim, Altihi, you know, the equivalent of Dan Yechidi, but also the equivalent of, if you know there's somebody, even if you are qualified, who's more qualified than you in a particular area, you know, Yiftach Bedoro, because Shmuel Bedoro is one side of it, and knowing who Yiftach and Shmuel are in the Doros themselves for certain issues, the Dorim HaGedolim VaChashuvim, however you define that, is critical as well. So that's one aspect that we discussed last time, that dialectic of, on the one hand, knowing your limits, and, you know, striving to become more competent, but at the same time, not, you know, hiding, you know, behind either humility or fear of making a mistake. Again, in the Gros Moshe and the Hagdama, and one of the tshuvas he expands on it, is very, very strong statements about this, about the sense of responsibility that people should have in every generation, you know, to become competent and to step up as competent people, you know, even if that entails, you know, difficulties. From a Yerushalayim point of view, just, you know, from an ego point of view, you know, from an assertion, you know, asserting yourself point of view. So you have to have that as well. That's the Harugim Kol Atzumeha. And it's a very tough, you know, balance or equilibrium, basically, to accomplish. So on the one hand, you know, deliberation, and on the other hand, you know, a sense of confidence and responsibility. And they're obviously not a stira, they have to work hand in hand. On the one hand, being betunim, even in the specific din Torah. On the other hand, you know, being sholeit on kol Torah kula, or at least the miktzos haTorah that you're responsible for, you know, to be able to say, al tegam game ela emor lo miyad, both in Talmud Torah, that's a goal, and in terms of expertise as a shir in you know, ru'uyas hagavra, not as a trick and not to impress. It's not... you know, magic tricks. It's, you know, but having a certain decisive command, that doesn't mean you don't have to look things up, but, you know, having both experience and especially a well-honed instinct in learning is something that you need to develop. That's part of Vishinantam Livanecha as well. So I wanted to do is just speak a little more about having Sunim Bedin. Not too much more, because we want to move on to the next one, which is education, Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. But I especially want to speak a little bit more to expand on some of the Rishonim's take on this. So Rashi Al-Atar is interesting. Rashi explains here on this Mishnah, Havu Mesunim Bedin Lashon Mamtinim Shelo Yugomrim Adin B'Mehera. Right, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't paskin too quickly. Elachokrin bo baomek lefi shahadin yoshev birumo shel olam sharei la seres adibro som choakasum tesiv ela mishpatim lamedcha shehem gufei Torah. Right, v'cheinu omer gam ela mishali. So basically, this is you know, obviously connected to Parshas Shavua. Right, the smichus parshios between aseres adibros and ela mishpatim, which we've spoken about, the idea that, you know, one would have thought, I'm adding to it a little bit, like everybody is bothered by that. That's the Machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva in the Bechilta to explain that to Smichos HaParshios. But Rabbi Shmuel, in particular, thinks that the link to Aseres HaDibros is very critical. The Orachayim on the Parsha that we just read, Elam Mishpatim, the first one, discusses that. He says, I don't understand really what the big deal is, and he tries to integrate it with a debate between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva that we find in Tzvachim. In general, whether or not the dikduke hamitzvos come from, you know, Sinai or not, or whether Shemitah, you know, manyanat Shemitah leitzahar Sinai is an exception. Very interesting things, but basically he's, you know, professes to be kind of clueless or at least questioning about why anybody would think that Mishpatim would be any different, given, you know, the consistent shitas of Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Kiva in other places as well. But then he quotes the position of the Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, you know, who suggests, quoting another Medrash, that, you know, what we mean when we say Ma Eila Misinai Af Eila Misinai is that the Eila Mishpatim were given Bekolos of Rakim. So the Arachayim, again, you know, says that's tamua, number one. You know, where does he get that from, and what does it mean? You know, we don't find that there were anything more than the Aseres HaDibros, and they were Bekolos of Brakim, so how do you just, you know, assume that the Eila Mishpatim were also Bekolos of Brakim? And if your point is that, you know, there was a difference between the Yes, Eres Adibros, you know, and the Elohim Mishpatim, even though they were still Bekolos Ubrakim, that's, there are three, let's say, you know, genres here. There's Kol Torah Kula, then there's the Aseres HaDibros, and then there's something about the Elohim Mishpatim. Why should that be? Like, what's unique, what's singular about all of that? But I think, you know, clearly the bigger idea here, probably, is the idea that, you know, one would have anticipated the Elohim Mishpatim to be more pedestrian, as we've discussed, because it is more universal. And therefore the idea that, you know, Af Elohim Misinai, that it isn't just good, efficient law, but it's, you know, something like the Rabbi Yonah that I mentioned, you know, Haskel V'Adoa Osi, that's specifically a reference to Din, that idea is expressed by the Chiddush of this Rabbi Yishmael. Even if all other Dinim are Dikdukim, you know, Misinai, or Klalim are Misinai, and that's all that's meant here. The idea that the Elohim Mishpatim is included with that is the Chiddush, and it establishes that, as Rashi says, the Lametcha Shehem Gufei Torah, because we would have thought that they are something less than that. V'cheinu Omer Gam Ela Mishali, right? Okay. So this is the point that Rashi makes. And then Rashi goes on to say something else. So the first point is that the Heaven B'sunim B'din, you should be aware that these are Dvarim Ha'omdim Berumo Shel Olam. And even in Mishpatim, never mind Iser V'Heter, that, you know, it isn't, you might think it's, well, it's Dine Mamanus, so it's Pachim Ketani. You know, it's less important. Or it's, you know, Nitan, you know, Letikun, right? You can always, you know, if you make a mistake, you can always go back. And the truth is that there are differences between Dine Mamanus and other areas of Halacha because of that. Both in terms of, you know, applying the Dinim L'chatchil, as we know, you know, Masa Mashakasa Batara Bitnai Davar Sheb and Bamon and Hefker Bez and Hefker and Dina de Machusadina. Right, all of these things are much more flexibly applied to Chosha Mishpat. But at the same time, these shouldn't give you the wrong impression, and that is that a psak, a hachra, both conceptually in terms of understanding what the values demand of us, and also practically, when we're relying on the posek, on the dayan, to make the right decision, that these still are, and in some respects they're even more so, Dvarim Ha'omdim Berumo Shel Olam. That's the first point, I think, that Rashi makes, and therefore the connection to Aseres HaDibros and possibly the Kolos of Rakim too are a way of highlighting that. But then Rashi goes on and says something else very interesting. Svara Acher, Mitunim Loshon Kosha. Klomar Shiyu Miskashim Umiskhanamim Bidin Shemitokach Yetzei Hadin Lamito. So this is a fascinating idea, and that is, you know, it relates a little bit to what we spoke of before. And that is the idea of encouraging debate in the context of a Din Torah, whether it's, you know, if you're the single Dayan, you know, trying to play devil's advocate and you know, challenge, you know, your initial perspective, or even your long-held or long-standing conviction about a certain halacha. And certainly in the context of a Bezin, again, we'll speak a lot about this next year, you know, the, you know, what's supposed to be going on, you know, in the Beis Din itself. And basically, again, we'll elaborate this through the halachos next year, but basically one can understand, you know, that there can always be two approaches to trying to come to a conclusion, right? You can do it in a collaborative, you know, consensus-oriented way, where two people put their heads together. I mean, these can be two methods of, you know, of Din. They can also be two methods of chavrusas, you know. Sometimes people sit down and they're just trying together, collaboratively, consensus, you know, oriented, to try to come to a certain conclusion. And, you know, they're using, you know, the full range of their knowledge and talents and instinct and previous experiences and so on, you know, to put their heads together very collegially, you know, to come to this conclusion. And other times, you know, the idea of competition and, you know, tension and debate, a more contentious approach, but, you know, one, again, intended also to find emes amito, and when you do that alone, you know, the devil's advocate approach is used as well. There's a famous discussion of the Rishonim, and I hope we'll discuss it next year, about, you know, in the beginning of Zeborer. So the way Zeborus works is, instead of having three Dayanim, you know, per se, it's zeh boro le'echad, v'zeh boro le'echad, and, you know, then the two, whether it's the two dayanim or the two balidinim, it's a debate, they pick the third. So, and then the Gemara says that, you know, the reason for that is that mitoch kach yetze hadin lamito. It's fascinating. Rashi uses the expression here, something I just read it. Shemitoch kach yetze hadin lamito. It really comes from that source. It doesn't say that here. You know, there's no quotations and there's no, this is the old, I don't know what they do in the new Gemaras, but in the old Gemara here there's no Makoros, but that's presumably where it's from. So, fascinating that Rashi quotes that here. By having mitsunim bedin, when he's interpreting the word mitsunim, instead of the way they normally way that we interpret it, which is deliberateness or moderation, right? Here he's interpreting the word mitsunim to be, you know, by fighting it out, and devil's advocating it, you know, as much as possible. I think it's taken from that context. If you look at the Rishonim in the beginning of Zaborer, and we won't discuss it at the beginning of the year, because I think we're starting from the beginning, but I hope to get to Zaborer. There's a, you know, Rashi has a very strong statement on the Mishnah there about how each dayan that is chosen by the Baldin kind of advocates, you know, his side. And it's strongly stated. And in some formulations of Rashi, some Tfusim, it's even more strongly stated. So the Rush, right in the beginning of Sanhedrin, calls him out on that. He said, well, what's going on here? We're not dealing with, I mean, I'm elaborating and dramatizing a little bit. We're not dealing with lawyers, you know, who are, you know, under the employ of their client and who are supposed to present, you know, each position, you know, advantageously for their client, you know, and to convince, you know, the judge. The way that it sounds a little bit from Rashi is zeh boro le'echad, zeh boro le'echad, u'shneim borim odechad, meaning that the third dayan, since he's the only impartial one, he's the only neutral one, he doesn't know his, you know, his position to any of the Balei Dinim, he's the one who's going to decide based on the, you know, interested presentations of each of the Dayanim. So the Rosh says, that's totally, I mean, the whole point of this is Shiyetze Adin Lamito, right? He's very upset about it. But I think clearly what, you know, obviously what Rashi and the Rishonim who are with him have in mind, and that's what he has in mind here as well, is of course the goal in the end is Sheyetze Adin Lamito. We're not talking about hired guns, and we're talking about not talking about falsification. But, and it's an interesting question where you draw the line in all this, the point is that Zavla, Zebor Lo Echad in particular, is intended to be not so much, according to these Rishonim, a collaborative or a consensus-oriented way of coming to truth, but a using antagonism and rivalry, you know, kinasofim et tarba chachma, to kind of explore every nook and cranny of this particular issue, and to you know, come up then with I mean, again, you have to have the integrity to know in the end of the day that you vote, you know, according, each one is supposed to vote, even Reuven's you know, Borer is supposed to vote for Shimon if that's really what he thinks in the end. But to give the old college try, at least, to put, you know, without lying or misrepresenting or, you know, going over the boundaries, but within those parameters, you know, pushing to the limits, you know, the presentation of Reuven's, you know, case, and of Shimon's case. Shemitoch kach yetze hadin lamita. I believe that this is also, again, we'll discuss it, the halachas of it next year, but there are no secrets here. But I think this is a very big issue in, you know, in the numbers of dayanim, you know, obviously the need for hachra built in, but also in particular the issue of eni odeya in dayanim. We find Rishonim very bothered. We'll discuss the details next year. But you know, how can eni odeya, you know, ever be worse than a negative vote? Right, as if you have, we say that if one of the dayanim says any odeya, then mosifim aleim dayanim. So the question is why? You know, at worst, he would have said darshnayim zakim and echad, you know, says any odeya. So at worst, he would have said, you know, chai. So there's a big debate among the rishonim. Some rishonim say, well, he's not a dayan because he's not doing his job. Part of the job of a dayan is to decide, to be decisive. That itself is a fascinating question. I think there are also two types of eniodeas. We'll discuss it next year. You know, there are eniodeas that are based on abdication, and there are eniodeas that are based on really, you know, seeing both sides. But anyways, the Rajba is a tshuva in which he pretty much is saying that the part of the idea here is that the din, being malabein the din, you know, is enhanced by, you know, having this kind of debate. And again, that's what some of the Talmidim are there for, and, you know, especially in the Pashos and the Maso Matan. So, you know, in a way, a din Torah where two overcome the opposition, strong opposition of a third, is a better two than the two, you know, that aren't, you know, pushed, they're not challenged, you know, it's just an idiot there. Anyway, we'll discuss it. But I think this is really what Rashi is getting at when he's in this other, you know, perspective of Musunim Bedin, the idea of, you know, be Mischanim Bedin, get passionate about it. Look at all sides of it. Shemitoch Kach, Yetze Adin Lamito. I think it's the same Rashi as the Rashi in Sanhedrin. And I think it's a very, very critical, very important idea. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, you know, at one point that, you know, seems to make a distinction between the Bavliim and the you know, Bnei Eretz Yisrael. You know, ke'ilu that the Bavliim were these, you know, contentious, you know, argumentative types, and, you know, Bnei Eretz Yisrael, you know, they're all much calmer and more collegial and consensus-driven. I said, Victor's smiling. You know, he's identifying.
Goodwill.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
what?
We should have sang for him.
We should have sang for him. But I checked with him. It seems that we sang for him on the audio.
Yeah. Earlier in the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, we don't want to cheapen the singing. You know. We want it to be meaningful when it happens. So, anyways, but we do welcome Avigdor. And he's, you know, here representing Eretz Yisrael. That's why I'm trying to say nice things. So, but again, it's a fascinating thing. Meaning, it's hard to say that one of these is better than the other. But you know, putting your heads together initially, putting all your energy into finding a collaborative consensus, you know, truth, is one approach. And you know, the Muchamta Shel Torah Maso Matan is another approach. They're not mutually exclusive either. Obviously, in the end of the day, after the Maso Matan and the, you know, take no prisoners, you know, Milchamta Shel Torah, for sure, the goal is Sheyetze Adin, whether it's in a Chavrusa or certainly in a Psak Din. But it's an interesting, it's a very fascinating issue. It's true in any, obviously, system that you have these issues. And in Halacha, there's much more material. And I say, plays itself out in very concrete issues, like any other day, we'll discuss them. But that's, I think, something that Rashi, just a few words of Rashi, you know, right? The great classical Mefarshim could say a lot, you know, with the turn of a phrase. And this is a great example of that. Rabbeinu Yonah equally says things about having Mesunim Bedin, which are very important. I alluded to it already last week. In addition to Haskel V'Yadoa Osi, you know, about Dine Maminus, which we talked about already, which is just incredible. And I should just add, that's incredible, but I've said this in the past, but I don't know, to this group. It's particularly important and incredible, meaning the idea that Haskel V'Yadoa Osi, that Yedias Hashem, comes from Choshen Mishpat, and I've tried to elaborate what I think he means by that, is particularly important because Rabbeinu Yonah himself, on the next Mishnah, so I guess we're allowed to get ahead of ourselves, next Mishnah says, Shimon HaTzadik Yom Mishyari Knesset HaGadola, Hu Haya Omer Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omeid Al HaTorah Al Avodah Al Gimel Chasadim. And then, of course, there's the last Mishnah, or the second last Mishnah in the Perek, the last Mishnah, which says, Shimon Gamil Omer Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam. Here the gear says, Omeid, Ala Din, Ala Emes, V'Ala Shalom. So there are two lists, right? Torah, Avoda, Gimilus Chasadim, and Emes, I'm sorry, Din, Emes, and Shalom. So the question is, what is the proper girsa, and what is the relationship between these lists? If they have the same girsa, then it's very tempting to say that, you know, they're the same. Torah, Avoda, and Gimilus Chasadim is the equivalent of Din, Emes, and Shalom, which puts Din, by the way, with Torah, which is pretty impressive. The reason I'm mentioning it now, though, is for a different reason, and that is that there are some who have different girsos. Now, there's some question whether the proper girsa should be Omeid or Kaya. And whether or not, if it's omed, it's omed in both, and if it's kayim and kayim in both, or is it omed in the first and kayim in the last, or the second. So the Rabbeinu Yonah happens to be the Rishon here in Avos, who weighs in and who says, in my opinion, there's a huge difference between omed and kayim. Omed means the purpose, or the telos, meaning what is the goal, what do we want to accomplish, you know, through the world. Shlosha Dvarim, omed means, you know, what is the world about? Why is there a world? You know, what's the purpose of it all? The big question. Okay. Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Kayam is a much more pragmatic statement, which basically says, what are the ingredients which ensures or secures, right, the efficiency of the world, you know, that the, that Ishas Chavero Chayim Bela'o will not take place. In other words, a minimum stability that precludes anarchy, etc. So Rabbeinu Yonah is the one who says this. Rabbeinu Yonah says, omed means the purpose, the tachlis, right? Not in Malach Shenitzrich HaLegufa sense, but, you know, similar. And the kayam means pragmatic, and then he explains, because din is very pragmatic. So the tour in Chosh Mishpat, the hagdam of the tour to Chosh Mishpat is a quotation of Rabbeinu Yonah in his comments about the difference between Omed and Kaya. Those who were here, we learned Bab Metziah. When was that? 2 years ago? Bab Metziah? 2 years ago. So we, you know, we talked about it a lot because we talked about Rabbeinu Yonah's using the comment on the tour, quoting it, of, you know, if you don't have din, you're going to have, what are you going to have? Kol da'alim gavar. Right, we were trying to explain how that's so ironic because, you know, sometimes we do paskin kol da'alim gavar. And that's, according to some Rishonim, even a psak. But where you're not supposed to paskin kol da'alim gavar, at least, it's, you know, the law of the jungle rather than din. Anyways, the it's fascinating that Rabbeinu Yonah, you know, also was sensitive to din being kayam-oriented, and at the same time understood that, you know, haskel v'yadoa osi is connected to, based on having the sunim badin, is connected to din, that there are two dinim in din. It's intended to be efficient, effective, you know, stabilizing, precluding anarchy. And at the very same time, the way, the method that it chooses to do that, you know, is elevating, you know, and uplifting and refining of man's character. Both these things are true. There's no stira between them, and that's essentially the connection to the Aseres HaDibur. Anyway, that's one part of Rabbeinu Yonah. But before Rabbeinu Yonah gets to that, he says something that I mentioned last week, and that is, Lemorim Hora'a, he says, Havu Mesunim Badin, Uleposkin Hora'os, Uleposkin Asadin Amru, Lebal Yismachu B'machshava Rishona, Ach B'hamtona Gedola, Ubi'iyun Hadak, Lebal yuta'u bishikol hadas. Don't rely, this is addressed to the great poskim, not even to the regular poskim, it's not even to the, you know, borderline, make sure you're competent to be a posek. This is not what the Rambam was talking about, gas, being a gas and a shota, and a gas ruach, we're in Russia, based on the mission of Perek Daled Avos. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, no, we're talking to the great poskim, right? Limore horos, uleposkim horos, uleposkin esadin. And telling them, even though you're qualified, I'm adding, and even though you're, you know, experienced, right? Lebal yismachu b'makshava rishona, don't just rely on your initial instinct. Ach b'hamtana gedola ubi'iyun adak, right? To deliberation and careful, you know, scrutiny, right? Subtle scrutiny. Lebal yita'u b'shikul hadas, lest you make a mistake b'shikul hadas. Now this is very interesting too. I'll explain in a second. Ki ha'adam ha'mimaher lahoros nikra, this is very sharp, posheya afa b'shakasha b'lomar ha'emes, you know, he means well, right? Ein ze shogeg ach karov l'mezidhu ashalom nasan b'levavo le'mar levav hanim harim lo yavin Ladas kitaus b'chol adam matzui b'zeu sh'omer azal hevizor b'talmud sheshigas talmud ola zadon. Well, in etze amar shloma olav shalom, right? Ra'isa ish chacham be'enav tikva l'chsil mimenu. Ukamosha Omer Chazal. Then he adds, Hagas libo bahorah shota rasha vegas ruach. So now he's not talking about the gavra, which is what the Rambam was talking about. He's talking about being a shota and a gas ruach in the implementation of a particular psak if you rely too much on your machshava rishona and out of laziness, presumably, right? You don't really investigate the details. Lachain ha'adam hamora yesh alisa v'litem v'davar v'lahach mitzah machshava v'lahashosa ke'inin sh'amr machmitzin esadin sh'ayidei chimutz v'hamtana mosif svara al svaraso. Right, this beautiful language. U'pilpul al pilpulo ad shi'yadin din emes la'mito ki b'machshavas hashniya yira lomar ma shalo ra'a barishona u'v'inan ze amar ki tkameitz Livavi v'kil yasai eshtonein klamar achrei asher livavi mitkameitz u'mitpalpel ala kachma v'kil yasai ani mishtonein u'mitkadeid hasagasi ladas ki b'li ze lo yadati v'ze chelki shakasav achrav ani ba'ar v'lo eida behemos hayisi imach. Yeah, then he goes on to talk about dinim and so on. So this is very interesting, Rabbeinu Yonah. On several levels. First of all, his comment about Taus Beshikol Hadas is particularly interesting. Again, as a Hagdama to Masechet Sanhedrin. The Sugya in Sanhedrin, or on Daf Lamed Gimel, one of the most really fascinating Sugyas, is the Sugya of Ta'a Beshikol Hadas and Ta'a Bidvar Mishnah. There's a difference between a Taus Bidvar Mishnah, that's like a factual mistake, and a Taus Beshikol Hadas, which is a mistake in assessment, basically, you know, in analysis, if you will, or an application of analysis. Now, there's a fascinating issue and debate, which we're not going to discuss right now, but maybe next year, hopefully next year, and that is what comes under the rubric of each of these. What is Tos B'Shikol Hadas, and what is Tos B'Dvar Mishnah? We know certain things. And if you make a factual mistake about the basic halacha, like, you know, you don't know you passed like Beis Hillel and not like Beis Shammai, or, you know, something, you know, basic like that, that's called Tos Bidvar Mishnah. And, you know, when, you know, it's not clear how we paskin, but let's say we have certain klalim, but there are exceptions, or, you know, the weight, you know, most people think that the weight of a particular psak is in one direction and not in the other. Now that's something in the area of Tos B'Shikol Hadas. Tos B'Dvar Mishnah is malpractice, basically. Again, we'll leave it for next year. We'll leave something for next year, right? So that's kind of a malpractice. And, you know, it's Chozer Adin, etc. The question is, when do you say Chozer Adin? When is there financial repercussions in legal or judicial malpractice in halacha? It's a very fascinating area. But, for example, just to raise a question, and let's say you don't know, let's say it's not in the Gemara, let's say the Gaonim al Paskin, you know, a certain way, or the Rishonim, right? Does that become Tos Bidvar Mishnah, you know, in at a certain point in history? Right? That's itself, just in terms of the evolution of halacha, and how consensus emerges, and how things change, that's a very fascinating, you know, topic. So if you look at the Rishonim, the Poskim, Piskei Tshuvas, and Chol Shemishpat, there's a whole literature about this to identify what is Tos B'Dvar Mishnah, what is Tos B'Shikol Hadas. Anyways, you get the idea, and that is that Tos B'Shikol Hadas, right, is still something that we hold the Dayan, you know, responsible for. There's a very fine line between Tos B'Shikol Hadas and saying Elu Ve'elu Devar Elokim Chayim, and giving the prerogative of the to the Dayan or the Posek, you know, to Paskin, you know, in some cases against the consensus, but within the range of legitimate views. Right? So you can understand this is a very subtle point. Now, in light of all that, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying here is just fascinating, because Rabbeinu Yonah isn't just saying, oh, there might be legal repercussions. He's basically saying that a Taos, B'Shikol Hadas, which can be a very subtle thing, right, isn't even, you know, a shogeg. It's karov lezadon, right? It's a posheya. It brings to mind the Rambam's famous formulation, right, about, you know, in Shomrim, you know, again, Parshas Mishpatim, that the Rambam's view is that a Pusheya is kemazik. Finish of the Rambam. So all the Mefarshim, beginning with the Ravid. Ravid has questions about Balavimo. Fine. But the other Mefarshim, mostly beginning with the Achronim, the Sivas and others, they just try to point out that this Rambam is seemingly untenable. Because if you were to apply the laws, or the rules of Mazik, so Poshea just doesn't qualify. It's too Grumma oriented. And it just, it's not Mazik. Moreover, it doesn't fully consistently seem to be treated as Mazik. What does the Rambam mean when he says Poshea is Kamazik? The reason I'm mentioning that now is I'm trying to use that as a bit of a paradigm. What does Rabbeinu Yonah mean here? And he's quoting Chazals to show that, even a toast, not B'dvar Mishnah, a toast B'dvar Mishnah is a kind of a, Karav Lemezit or a Mazik. We understand. I mean, it basically shows his lack of competence. It's inexcusable that he should make this kind of a mistake. Right? But toast B'shikol Adas, as I say, is not as clear cut. And, to call it, you might say, okay, so he's liable in some sense, and we're critical of him, but say Karov Lemezit or Poshea seems harsh and seems likely, I would say, from a policy point of view, to discourage people. There's this whole, dialectic of Rabbi B'chalal Mipila Tzum Kol Arugeha, being a gas and a shota, but on the other hand, having the responsibility, to step up. That doesn't seem very encouraging when you tell people that even the toes B'shikol Adas that you're going to make, was an egregious, violation, and it's Karav Lemezit. So it's a very fascinating, depiction of what's going on here. But what it highlights again is this idea of achrayus and responsibility. The idea of the Rambam of Poshea Kemazik, the answer to the Rambam basically has its roots in where he formulates it, and that is, in the case of Poshea Kemazik, just as the example, in Hilchos Tzchiros. Just as, for example, the dinim of Nizkei Shkenim, Hezek Re'iya, Nizkei Shkenim, Archakas Nezakin, these are dinim in Hilchos Shkenim. The point is, again, because they're two, Mefarshim ask, you shouldn't use the expression Nezakin, because you basically, doing things in the precincts of your own property, and any other legal system, pretty much, or most legal systems, even efficient ones, and even idealistic ones, would allow people, to conduct themselves as much, any way they want within their own property. If I want to leave glass shards on my own property, buyer, or enterer, beware. So, what does all this mean? But the halacha's view is very contextual, right? Not only in terms of, hotzah, but the point is that the raised expectations because of your obligation to your neighbor, yafal rachel kamocha, in some cases, or as a shachain in others, if you live next to somebody or you're part of a neighborhood, so that heightens your level of responsibility. And if you accept somebody's pikadon, right, under your charge, so it's not just, a legal arrangement. Basically, he is relying upon you. That reliance and that extra responsibility, but particularly the reliance, that comes from it, just transforms. It takes, what is a sheval tasa and a grumma and turns it halachically into a kumvase, a kind of a positive act of neglect. The expectation that others have of you and your added obligation, assumed obligation to them in the halakha can transform an action. That's what the Rambam has in mind. Hilchos Shchenim is a factor that transforms Dine Mazik. And Hilchos Schirus transforms Dine Mazik. And what Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us is that Hilchos Dayanim also, if you want to be functioning as Elohim, right, as in this week's Parsha, and, if you look at the Mefarshim, some of them say it explicitly. Even though the Elohim, Ad Yavod, Dvar Shnehem, is Lashon Chol. It refers to Dayanim Smuchim. But again, some of the Farshim say, it's a coincidence. And we find that language to be used as a power language or a Sholeit language. And of course, the ultimate Sholeit is the Rabbona Shel Olam, but Elohim is, we'll talk about this again when we talk about the Hakdamah to Sanhedrin, but, Elohim is, the ultimate Sholeit, and it also refers to a Chol Sholeit. Others say, like Ibn Ezra, that Elohim refers to, the Dayanim, the people who are, in charge of, given responsibility to implement Elohim's, laws. Works nicely with having Masudim B'din. But some of Farshim explain even further than that, and that is that, the Elohim, is directly connected to Elohim. Meaning, a Dayan Samuch is somebody who is representing not just the Torah or the law of the Rabbanu Shalom, but he's kind of in lieu of Kivyachol, right? He's playing a certain role in the community. And as such, he has tremendous responsibility. Again, just read in this last couple of parshios, who is this person and what are his credentials, his moral credentials, in addition to his intellectual and educational, legal credentials. Right, he has to be Sonei Betza. It's interesting. The Ritva says Heaven Mesunim Badin is from a lashon of Matana, meaning he has to be very careful, to exclude anything like shochad or any kind of interest. Heaven Mesunim Badin be a Matana oriented, dayan. It also says Heaven Mesunim Badin means like Nisunim. When you're a dayan, you should be medaktek in the case and lose sleep over it to the same extent as if you were one of the Bali dinim, if you were Nisunim Badin. That's the Ritva. Anyways, the idea is, again, we talked over there about Betzia, those who are here, I don't know how many people are still here, but we have a few. We talked about Shuda the Dino. So, some of the Rishonim are very bothered by, if Shuda the Dino is a kind of arbitrary. There's a debate between Galitosis and Rashi and others. What is Shuda Daina? So somebody say, you're supposed to kind of read the mind or penetrate the psyche of the Bali Dinim and try to figure out who whether it's in the present or based on past history, who likely is the Zoche here? Who likely would the Morish have wanted to have this property or the Makne or whatever. That's an imperfect science, obviously, but it's an understandable one. The Bali Tosas say, no, it's arbitrary. Right? He can give it to whoever he wants. So there's some Rishonim ask, if it's arbitrary, Bishlomo, if it's, trying to read the guy's mind, that without objective information, that's a question, with objective information, without objective information, and again, I don't want to get the whole thing, but fine, at least we can understand why there would be an Iser Shochad even in a case where there's Shuda the Dina, because it matters really, what he really thinks. But if it's arbitrary, he just gets to decide, so how can there be any problem of Shochad? Right? So this is a question they ask. So I think, one possibility is, and I believe in this strongly, that even those Rishonim who say that, he makes a decision and it's arbitrary, they don't mean arbitrary based on his own self-interests. They also think it's a kind of a, instinct. This, that the real debate is how, objectively rooted does your instinct have to be. But however, but I think another perspective, because certainly not everybody understands it that way, is the idea that a person who's mekabel shochad is mufka from Hashem Dayan, even if the extent to which actually it changes his view or the degree of change of view. Does or doesn't matter. Ad kedei kach, you have to be, sonei botza and anshe chayil. That's part of the hagdara. It's not that, the dayan has a role, has a definition. Some of his prerequisites are in order to yetze adin, emes lamito, that he be a man of integrity, a man of knowledge, somewhat cosmopolitan, so he also has greater sophistication and understanding, which is necessary in understanding people and situations of din. Right, all of those elements, and this is one of them. Rather, some of these requirements are part of the shame dayan itself. That's part of, you know, hevum mesunim, matana, nisunim, all part of this idea of bedin. So there's a, you know, the idea of Elohim is a certain gab, a certain stature, a certain religious stature, and again we'll speak much more about it. But the point is that if that's the case, if the dayan, you know, is playing this kind of a role, so then hilchos dayanus, even more so than hilchos schirus and hilchos shchenim, you know, raises not only the stakes, like Rashi says, it's dvarim omdim berumo shalolam, but even more so, it just redefines what constitutes shogeg and posheya and mezid. And that's really what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, this guy has experience, he's a proper dayan, we still want him, you know, not just to rely on his previous experience and his instinct and his cursory or first, survey of this topic. We really want him to go that extra mile, think of it a second time dafka. If he doesn't, even if his mistake is in the area of shikol adas, we consider that to be posheya and karov lemezit. That's the high standards. We hope that doesn't scare away or discourage people, you know, from the atzumim kol harugeha. On the contrary, we hope that they, you know, perceive it as enough. I'm speaking for Rabbeinu Yonah right now, if he didn't say all this part. But it's okay. You know, he authorized me to do so, so I feel I can do it. You know, we hope it doesn't discourage people. On the contrary, we hope that the high standards and the noble goal, you know, that that we're talking about is something that will inspire people to, you know, put themselves out and to understand, you know, what role this is, and to make themselves worthy of it. Okay. Having said that, so I want to just finish with the Rambam. Rambam also weighs in on this. We already talked about what the Rambam says in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Here the Rambam says, Hevu Mesuna Bedin, again, Sheya'achru Lachto Kadin, Velo Yapsikuhu Mehera, Ad Sheyavinuhu, She'efshar She'izgalu Lohem Inyanim, Shelo Yuniglim Betchila Samachshava. Again, Rabbeinu Yonah is taking off a lot of the Rambam, but again, this is a very important, you know, idea. The idea that when you revisit things, you get a different perspective, you know, on them. I think also what the Rambam is also telling us here, and some of the other Mefarshim will be more explicit about it, no two cases are alike, because the circumstances are different, and the Balei Dinim, you know, are different too. And again, this is an issue, you know, for Sanhedrin, but one of the interesting questions is, to what extent, when we're involved in Psak, and especially Din Torah, you know, do we view the Balei Dinim and the case as a Hechatimtzi, you know, for which, you know, we find the best Beis Medrash solution? Partially, that is what happens, right? That should be what happens. You know, we should be looking at this, you know, as a sugya. We'll get to that in a second as well. But, you know, one extreme view of that is to basically say, you know, that the Balei Dinim in front of us are Hechatimtzi for that, you know. In that sense, you know, some of the poskim over the generations, you know, used to say that their involvement in Psak, you know, enhanced their Talmud Torah by being forced, you know, with the added pressure of the pragmatic, you know, consequences, to look at the sugya again and to look at it more with greater acuity. Having Mesunim Badin, the contribution of being involved in real Talacha, you know, contributes enormously to pushing the envelope, not in a negative way, but in a, like we said before, devil's advocacy, you know, just, you know, looking at things afresh, etc. So there is that aspect of it, and from that point of view, you might look at Balei Dinim and cases as, you know, expanding Talmud Torah, which they do, and primarily in that direction. Or not. To some extent, since we're dealing with, you know, real people and their feelings, and their mumminess, or in the case of Isur v'Heter and other things, other aspects of their lives. So, of course, the foundation still has to be the Maso Matan and the you know, the Gemara and the Tosis and the Amshel Shlomo and so on and so forth. But on a certain level, part of Pevu Mesunim Bedin, and part of what the Rishonim are saying here is, you have, no two cases are alike, not only because intellectually there might be differences, subtle, but differences, but there are two other aspects too. One is, you have to have the respect that you're dealing with a particular case, and that this is a din Torah about this, and then by definition, no two dine Torah, even if they're identical, are identical, because this is the din Torah of Reuven and Shimon, and the last din Torah was one of Levi and Yehuda, and that just makes it different fundamentally. There's a certain siyata d'shmaya, you know, in these things as well. I think it's a second element. You know, the mention that Netziv says that smicha given to a dayan is to kind of underscore the siyata d'shmaya that is required. You know, in the Vayigba Shem Tzavakos b'mishpat. But I think that there's another element too, and that, of course, is that, you know, in addition to the hardcore facts of a psak, there are also, as I say, the human elements that become, in some cases, factors in the psak. You know, a great example of that is, you know, the question of, Shasadchak and Hefsid Meruba. Again, you have it in Yoredeya, and sometimes you have it in Choshen Mishpat as well. So you have to be careful about that too. You know, the Psukim in this week's Parsha tell us, you know, you shouldn't think, you know, when you have a wealthy man and a poor man in front of you, that, you know, Osata b'mishpat, because, you know, you can make a case either way. You know, I'll find a way to provide that money and more, or, you know, to the impoverished person, but we don't want to embarrass the, you know, man who's important in the community, or vice versa. You know, for the person of means, you know, this is a drop in the bucket. For this other person, you know, it's a huge part of his subsistence, right? And the actual psak, you're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to paskin on that basis in either direction. But it's very subtle, you know, that point, and the point of understanding who the dayanim in front of you are, in terms of things like, you know, Hesed Meruba, you know, Shuda Dedaina, in terms of, you know, measuring, you know, what constitutes what we sometimes call Din Meruma, where, you know, you think you can't prove it, but something is fishy. And the latitude given to Dayanim in the case of Din Meruma. So part of Hevum Mesunim Bedin is also the recognition that, you know, psak is both universal and application-oriented, but at the very same time, very personal. You owe, you know, a personal attention and focus to the psak, and that even substantively, in some cases, being very careful, you know, not to be matedin, you need to know who the people are and you know, you know, what certain mean things are to them in context, etc., and walk that that fine line. And that's challenging as well. And then finally, the last point to make, and with this will end, is that, you know, there's a huge, huge discussion. I mentioned it, you know, I made allusion to it last time, about, you know, the role of codes, and again, the relationship between, you know, paskening shilas, methodologically relationship between that, and learning in a base medrash. Even, you know, as simple a matter as the codes themselves reflect that. In other words, you're a posek, you know, to what extent are you, you know, going back to the, you know, the Parsha and Chumash and the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Rishonim, you know, and the poskim, or do you mostly begin your pursuit, you know, either with the Shulchan Aruch or, you know, with the Igros Moshe, or in some cases for people, you know, the Mishnah Brura, etc. And there's no easy answer to those questions. Obviously, ideally, you know, Hevim Mesunim Bedin would require that you reassess each time from the beginning and that you, you know, kind of clue into, you know, the sugya, you know, become attuned, you know, to the rhythm of the discussion again. ideally. But obviously, you know, you get into Moshe Rabbeinu problems if you're going to do that every single time. You know, if you paskin the shaila 100 times, or you know, you have 100 shailas to paskin. So, you know, that level of mesunim badin, which is ideal, you know, is not something that you can pursue each time. So the idea that there are codes and there are precedents, you can't ignore them either. You shouldn't be ignoring them. It's good to look at things fresh. And there's even a time to be a maverick when it's appropriate in terms of the dialectic of, being roi lahora. But at the same time, precedent is very important and consensus is very important. So driving, you know, between these two extremes is very important as well. That's part of Hevum Sunim Bedin, you know, as well. You know, there always have been different schools of psak, just as there always have been different views about codification and paskening. Already the Gonim is the Tshuva of the Rimigash, and Rambi Prague is a famous, again, I hope to do this at some point more fully, the brother of Rambi Prague. You know, this whole literature about this. You know, is it better to sometimes make a mistake, but to engage each topic, you know, yourself and personally? Or how much do you rely on the work of the people who came before you? Assuming, again, that, you know, that you're applying at least, you know, fully to the case in front of you. That's a big, big and important issue, and there have always been poskim, you know, who practically begin with the Shulchan Aruch, you know, or in Arte's with the Mishnah Brura, and others who begin with the Gemara. Just look at the Tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, very independent, and, you know, very, sometimes just, you know, radically rooted in, you know, his understanding of the alumnus of the Sugya, even in big issues. Very remarkable, very striking, very inspiring, but also very scary. But you know, that's one kind of a psak. And you know, take Rav Avad Yosef, Zecharno Levracha, you know, whose tshuvas are, you know, just a very different tone, you know, and much more oriented towards, you know, the history of how poskim, you know, dealt with them, etc. And there's a lot, you know, in between on the side as well. So Hevum Mesunim Badin, in my opinion, in our day, you know, also imposes this challenge, because, you know, there are, on the one hand, there's a group of people who just think that Psak is the gathering of information, you know, and then they have their own rules about how they paskin, you know, almost like, you know, computer input, you know, of data and so on. And I think that that is not true at all. There's a lot of instinct that goes into Psak, and certainly experience, and a lot of Yerushimayim. There are intangibles. And as, you know, the focus on the specific case, all of this militates against it, against all of that. The use of computers and computer programs in our day, the Bar Ilans and these other things, you know, is an amazing tool and definitely something that should be, you know, should be used. But the reliance on it, you don't even know where who some of the people are, you know, you're getting information through, you know, code word searches, you know, which are sometimes not accurate, sometimes not exhaustive, or sometimes just misleading. And again, I'm not for dismissing, these are amazing tools which certainly can be used very constructively. But they have to have a mesunim, you know, deliberately, carefully, you know, with thought. There's a lot of psak today, you see, like, you know, there's, you know, internet psak, you know, which is not focused on who the people are who are asking the questions, and it's also, you know, very driven by the computer programming. You know, it's very quick. There's a lot of Hevum Mesunim Bedin challenges in some of the things that are going on today. That doesn't mean they should all be thrown out, because some of them are also, you know, give access and provide services. You know, a lot of wisdom needs to be exercised. At the same time, you know, in different circles, I've talked about this a lot, it's a pet, you know, peeve of mine, I guess. The eclipse of, you know, the Gemara and the Rishonim in Psak, in many circles, and especially even in the Shulchan Aruch, the eclipse of the Nosa Kalim, you know, for the Mishnah Brura, is, you know, is both ironic and problematic. I mean, the Mishnah Brura is an amazing sefer, but the idea that you just get the Magen Avraham and the Taz and the Gra, you know, through the Mishnah Brura, is something that, in my opinion, the Mishnah Brura would have been horrified about. Again, if you read his Akdama, he meant his work to be an update, you know, of the poskim, you know, since, you know, previous updates, like the Berhetev and others. He certainly didn't mean for it to eclipse. He wasn't assuming that you're not reading the Magen Avraham and the Taz and the Gra. It's in a much better, much more impressive work, actually, Mishneh Berurah, when you know, you know, what he's selecting and what he's interpreting from what he's selecting, what he's omitting. It's just a much more, you can appreciate also more, much more his input and his authority. Certainly true in the Be'er Halacha. So, but the trend now, which is just, you know, at least in our Chayim, just to start with the Mishneh Berurah, and is, I think, a bit of a violation of Hevim Basunim Badim. Again, that the Mishneh Berurah has emerged as a consensus, you know, authority figure relative to other poskim contemporary to him, you know, is a reality which needs to be integrated. I don't think it has to always be accepted. There are other poskim too. But the Mishneh Berurah certainly has emerged in that way, and that's important. That has a certain impact, you know, facts on the ground. But, you know, part of Hevim Basunim Badin is, you know, not to be too quick and not to be too reliant on sikumim and, you know, tamtzios, you know, as opposed to knowing, you have to weigh that with also not being stuck, you know, and not being able to pass in the shilas in front of you. So, again, there are new upgrades now of that. That's also very helpful. Different ones that are emerging. But all I'm saying is that Hevim Basunim Badin is an ongoing challenge, which in our day, you know, has certain opportunities and again certain pitfalls to avoid, and we just need to assess, you know, how best to go about it in constructive fashion. So we'll stop with for now. Next time, hopefully, we'll do have Hamidu Talmidim Harbei, and especially they start with the Machlokas Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about elitist education for next time.